This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And it is a gorgeous Saturday morning, and hopefully it stays that way for the Autumn Classic this evening. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
So we have, the marching band competition at Parkway Field, and that is on the air on B107.5 at 5:45 this evening. But this is the gardening show here, and what do you have to talk about today?
I got a lot.
Oh, boy, okay. I see you brought me a snack.
Yeah. I was on vacation last week, and it was a terrific vacation. We went down to Nashville and Memphis along the Blues Trail. I really like the blues. And we ended up in Arkansas, and we stayed in a little tiny home down there, which was a pretty neat experience.
Oh, one of those, like, they convert, like, almost like a shed type sized?
Yeah. And we were both quite surprised. You know, it was very, very comfortable.
Yeah.
Even though it was only, like, 10 by 20.
Wow.
It was very comfortable. But we were surrounded by cotton fields.
Wow.
And of course, we had to go to cotton museums. And of course, we're just look out our window and we can see, as far as your eye can see, cotton fields. And all the little things they had to do in the cotton fields, which was amazing to me. And it's very, very labor intensive. And at one time, and I guess some people claim still that it's the king of plants, cotton is king. But of course, all the corn growers will tell you that corn is king. And then all the foresters will tell you the tree is king. So just believe what you want.
King, like what? There are, it's the most? Or
yeah, the biggest crop.
Okay.
Yeah. And depending on where you live, you know, down in Arkansas, cotton is king.
Yeah, of course. It depends on where you are.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So I wanted to show you, along with our little tiny home, surrounded by cotton fields.
You picked some cotton?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I wanted to show you that. We were able to go out in the field and pick a little cotton.
I've never seen raw cotton before. It has a stem on it and everything.
Yep, a stem. And then surrounded by these thick petals. It's called the bowl. Oops, I got two cotton balls there. it's very nice to touch.
Wow, weird.
Except the stem and the bowl and all that has a lot of pricklies on it. But we had a lot of fun. We were allowed to go out and pick a few before they harvested, and they're harvesting right now. yeah.
I'm showing the camera.
Okay.
Wild.
Yeah. So it takes a lot of labor. It takes 200 days from seed to the time that it can harvest it, and it takes a lot of dry weather at the end to harvest too, and it takes a perfectly flat field, and I mean flat like a pool table field, so all the machinery can operate like it's supposed to, because they're going to harvest the cotton bolls, and then next they're going to come and cut the rest of the cotton plant down right down to the ground. They want to get rid of the whole plant to get rid of any pest or disease that may have been there. And then after they've harvested the field, it was interesting. I had no idea that then they burn the whole field.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Neat.
And that's, of course, to get rid of any pests that may have been there and to put nutrients back in the ground. Really a recent discovery, and that is very important. We kind of learned that from the Amazon, where archaeologists have dug down and they hit that black streak. They have given it a name called Terra Petra. It's all charred soil. And that soil there is still, after 1,000 years, still more nutritious than the soil that we have right now.
Wow.
It sets up its own microbiome and can feed a plant for centuries. So it's become popular. A lot of people adding charcoal and ashes and so on to your gardens now. It does help the soil.
Yeah, I saw one time coming back visiting family. It was on 86, around the, I guess, Little Valley, Salamanca area, like over there. They were doing a controlled burn.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, because the cotton plant itself, you know, can be bothered by a lot of different pests. In order to protect it, so they don't have to do so much spraying, you know, they burn the field to get rid of all those pests that may linger through the winter into the next planting season. But very fascinating, and learned a lot about the history of the plant and how important it is to the world. You know, cotton is in just about everything. And what really shocked me was it's nutritious.
No.
Yeah. And as we were in a museum.
Well, yeah, cotton candy, right?
All parts of the plant. Of course, it used to have a lot of poisons in it to help protect it against animals nibbling on it and certain insects. But they have bred it to the point where now it's all those chemicals are not present in the plant. It's nutritious. As a matter of fact, after they harvest the cotton boll, then they cut the rest of the plant down, and that's feed for cattle.
Oh, wow. So nothing goes to waste.
Yeah, nothing goes to waste at all.
Great.
So it was real informative, and I have to thank my wife for taking me on this trip there. It was probably the trip of a lifetime for me.
So this is this one crop, or is this a bunch of, like, cotton?
Yeah, it's
put
one
together.
Yep,
this is one. Okay,
yep.
So yeah, nice. It looks kind of like a clumped up, like how you buy those cotton balls in the store.
Yeah, it does.
It looks like maybe about, I don't know, 8 of them clumped together. You know, like that's about the size of,
yep,
how it comes.
And it does have. There was still a few flowering there yet. Beautiful flower on that cotton plant, but. And I remember many years ago for the science department, I grew some cotton out at Pitt. Now, the one problem is cotton, to get to this point, takes 200 days.
Oh, yeah.
And we just don't have 200 days of good weather here.
Mm-hmm.
But it still was a neat plant to look at, and it did flower a little bit. But we didn't get any bowls like this. So I did know a little bit about cotton, and now I know a little bit more about it. Very fascinating plant. So other things I wanted to talk about today was, you know, it's ant and mice season.
And they're
all trying to prepare for winter. They know what time of year it is. So it's a real good idea to set out a few of those mouse traps. An easy bait is cheese or peanut butter. You know, they just can't resist. And it'll help you out a lot before they start breeding again and multiplying in your house. So try to catch them before that point. I like to set traps out in the garage. Somehow they get into the house. I don't know how. And my cats like to play with them. So I set the traps out in the garage and that seems to keep the population way down. Rarely get a mouse in the house anymore.
Would the cats keep the population down?
No, they wouldn't. No, no, they wouldn't.
They just play with them.
Yeah, they just play with them.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. But ants also. And here's an important fact about ants. They can adjust to your poison. If you're using one type of ant killer all the time, they will mutate, and that poison can become food the ants over time. So it's important that every now and then you change the chemical makeup of your poison. So don't buy one brand all the time. Switch off and buy a different brand that has a different chemical so they can't develop tolerance to that poison. And you'll be much more successful. But other things you can do too is, you know, when you're mowing your lawn or walking around, you know, look for those ant mounds and try to get rid of them right away, because they'll be heading in too, and they'll be multiplying for next year. So keep that in mind, the ants and the mice, very important.
So I remember somebody told me gasoline kills ants. Is that true?
Yeah, it's probably true, but that's a dumb thing
to
do.
It's a dangerous thing to do,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's going to kill everything else.
So, I mean, not to light it on fire, just to dump it on
it's still
the
dumb.
Mound.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Gasoline or diesel or kerosene, all of those, it's just really dumb. Yeah. Don't do that.
Okay.
There are real ways to control the ants.
What about for mice? I've heard about mothballs. Is that an urban myth or what?
No, that does work, yeah. That,
like they don't like the smell of it, so they keep away?
Is yeah, a lot of animals don't like the smell of mothballs because it smells like cat urine.
Oh, yeah. Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
I never got that.
And, of course, that's their arch enemy, so that deters them. It may not keep them away totally, but it can deter them. Another way, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, ants hate citrus.
Mm, that's so, right. I remember you said
so,
that.
So a little bit of lemon oil around where you think the ants may enter your house is going to deter them. And that smell we can withstand. As a matter of fact, a lot of your household sprays, air fresheners and all that have citrus in them. So it's a nice, pleasant smell.
Now, does that attract the mice? Sure, it keeps away the...
Oh, no, no, it
keeps
doesn't.
Away the ants, but no.
As a matter of fact, it deters a lot of creatures. We have a deck out back that's raised, and sometimes the skunks or other animals will like to go under there.
Yeah.
So once in a while, I'll throw an old lemon under there.
No kidding.
And that scent will keep those animals away also.
Wow.
Yep. So lemons are... can be a good thing to deter a lot of those pests.
Fantastic.
Now, we're lucky, and I this is going off on a tangent, which I always do. Luckily, I have a brother-in-law that lives in Arizona, and so he grows lemon trees and sends us a box of lemons every year, and they last a long, long time in the refrigerator, which and I make a lot of juice out of them, too.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I like lemon juice.
Oh, yeah.
But the ones that start to go bad, I give them a toss underneath the deck, and that seems to keep the critters away.
Well, that's very useful. That's
yeah, it is. It is.
Good thing to have a lemon guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a lemon guy.
So, also, I wanted to talk about the apple.
Yes, that's what I was alluding to earlier. I said, oh, you brought me a snack.
Yeah, this one came from my yard. This is a Golden Delicious apple with a lot of spots on it because I never spray my tree. And those spots do not harm you. They can eventually harm the apple, but chances are I'm going to harvest the apples if the deer don't get them all or the bear.
So what makes the spots?
It's a fungus.
Oh.
But it's not harmful to humans or the animals.
I never would have thought of that. I thought the spots were because of like bugs or something like that.
No. There can be, if it's a brown spot, it's probably a bug that was feeding on it.
Right.
And again, they're not going to harm you. But those black spots, they're just a fungus that's real common. And if you really are... bothered by it, you know, there are a lot of fungicides to apply all through the season to stop that. But,
it's really just for the appearance.
Yeah, that's about
it. It doesn't hurt you at all. It doesn't affect the flavor.
Nope, doesn't at all.
And is it just on the outside? Like if you peel that, is the fungus inside?
No.
Just on the outside?
Just be on the outside.
It just looks like it has big freckles.
That's all. Yeah. Yep. No harm at all.
Gives it character.
but, this is a big, big year for the apples. All the apple trees are producing a very heavy crop. So it's a great time for people to go out there and make some apple pies, applesauce.
Yeah.
You know, you can make applesauce out of this, put it in a container, freeze it. You can have it all year round. Same with apple pies. Because the next few years, there'll be very, very few apples.
Mm.
The apple tree can't produce a heavy crop every year. So this year is a good time, and it's still lots of time, to harvest some apples. Now, some apples, like the Golden Delicious, I like my apples sweet. So the colder the weather gets, the sweeter this apple will get. Now, it's already dropped quite a few, but I just kind of rake them up into a pile, let the deer and the bear have their feast. But I'll try to leave on the tree as many as I can till it get really cold. Even after a frost is the best time for me to start picking the apples, because they'll be really sweet. I like sweet. Most people like sweet. Most animals like sweet. Yeah. Everything on earth likes sweet. So take advantage of a great apple year, because next year, chances are, there will be very, very few.
How is that? How do all the other trees that aren't related in different areas of the town and all that, how do they all decide this is the year we're all going to produce?
Yeah, that's a mystery to man. Yeah, horticulturists and botanists still haven't discovered why all the oak trees do a mass season, why the apple trees do a kind of a mass season. They really don't know yet what they know the process that it takes so much energy to produce a heavy crop, that now it's got to rest, but they don't know why the timing is like it is.
Because I was going to say, you know, if it's like once every 3 years or whatever, then all the different trees, depending on how old they are, you know, they'd all have the same cycle, right? But at different times.
Yeah.
But they all go at the same time.
Yes, they do.
Like, and, wow, that's...
You know, the best guess is it has a lot to do with weather. An apple tree or an oak tree produces a lot of fruit 1 year. Now it has to rest, and if the next 3 years are real good weather and it can grow and produce a lot of food, then that fourth year it'll be able to produce a crop. But if it doesn't have, if we don't have good weather for those 3 years, it may wait till the fourth or the fifth year to build up enough strength to produce that big crop. Now, they do know that much, but they still don't know the particulars about the process.
Well, fascinating. All right. Hey, let's take a short
break.
And we'll be right back with more of The Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM.
You know it's coming. That colder weather is on the way. Make sure you're ready with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. It's not too early to start stocking up on wood pellets for your heating stove. If it's time to replace your pellet stove, see Worth Smith for their line of quality Harman stoves. You'll also find a big selection of stove pipes and other heating supplies in stock. And don't forget the antifreeze for your RV. Be prepared for the weather ahead. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
We're back with The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. I was just going to tell you, you know, we didn't show the spots to the camera. For those following us on Facebook Live. So
yeah.
Facebook.com/WESB1075. And you can comment any questions you might have there. Bob's showing the camera that now what we were talking about from the fungus on those apples. Completely harmless.
Yep.
But just, yeah, looks like a kind of like freckles. So there you go. Now, if you have any questions, you can also email us garden@wesb.com. Any advice that you would like from the master gardener, Bob Harris, you can get them in that way as well.
Another thing I wanted to talk about a little different here is about the tomato. Some of us, you know, have that volunteer tomato plant that all of a sudden popped up in our garden. And if you let it go, let it continue to grow, you don't have to stake it or cage it. You know, it's better if you do. But if you just let it grow, a lot of times, most of the time, you're going to end up with a better tomato than what the ones you planted. Now, it seems pretty odd that that happens, but a lot of times that does happen. And I let a few those, we call them volunteers, grow in my garden from once in a while, and I take care of them, water them. And it's funny about that. Most tomatoes have been really hybridized. That means scientists have taken the genes from one plant, put them into another plant, you know, either through pollination or through electric process of hybridizing, or even a gun that they shoot genes, special genes, into the seed and create their own variety. And hopefully it's a better variety. But a lot of times, somehow, nature does that for us by crossbreeding. And tomatoes can crossbreed. You can buy
cherry tomatoes?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You can buy like an early girl that's a little different and a beefsteak. Grow them together. That pollen may go from one tomato plant to the other and pick up the genes from the one plant, put it in the other, so that next year's seed will be a whole different plant.
Wow.
It won't be exactly the same as what you planted. As a matter of fact, it happens most of the time. Now, there are ways that you can really predict what that cross-pollination is going to be. And I brought in a couple samples here. Now, you can use other material, but these are hybridizing bags. Real fine mesh bags. They come in different colors. I brought these two in, but a lot of them will be white. And what it feels like is nylon stockings. And you can take the flower from one tomato plant, put it on the other, put the bag over there, and then cinch it up so no other pollen can get on there, so that you can be assured that you've crossed one tomato plant with another.
Wow.
And then you'll be able to collect those seeds from that fruit that develops and grow that next year. And possibly you'll come up with a brand new tomato plant, which there are thousands of tomato plants out there already, but not thousands that we can grow here in Bradford.
I'm going to create a beef steak that actually tastes like beef and or steak. That's what my goal.
There you go. but that can be fun to do. And you don't have to use one of these special bags. You can use a paper bag. Do your cross-pollination. Take a flower from one tomato plant and brush it on the other flower of the other tomato plant. Put a paper bag over so the bees can't transfer or the air transfer different pollen. And then you'll be assured of that one kind of cross. Then you can save the seeds from that tomato to plant next year to see what kind of tomato plant you've developed.
Great. Yeah, we have a question here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Kathy writes in, how can you get rid of creeping Charlie that's taking over the yard? Now, we've talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Kathy probably wasn't listening on that one. That's fine, because that's a problem that a lot of us have.
Yes, it
and
is.
I still have. So, yeah, the majority of my area of one of my backyard is all creeping Charlie.
Okay.
And I have, like, no grass. Kathy wants to know if there's a spray that you can put on it or will ride also kill the grass? What's that mean? I don't know. I think that might be a typo.
Oh, yeah.
Or will it maybe kill the grass? It seems like it's really going wild this year. Or creeping Charlie.
Yeah, and all those weeds are real dependent on environmental conditions. And creeping Charlie has had the perfect year for it, plenty of rain and sun and the right temperatures for it to really grow and spread. But the best way, in my opinion, to get rid of creeping Charlie, it's likes acid soil. So the first thing you want to do is lime your yard.
Lime.
That will weaken the Creeping Charlie. Now, you can go out there and spray an herbicide on Creeping Charlie. And fall is the best time because what's happening is the leaves are taking all their food and not producing new leaves. They're sending it down to the root system to store for next year. So at this time of year when we spray, it's going to spray an herbicide. It's going to collect that herbicide, take it down to the roots. So you're going to be assured of killing the root system too, not just the leaves on. So if you sprayed in the spring, chances are you didn't kill the Creeping Charlie.
Okay.
You made it disappear, but the root system remained. So it's going to come back. So if you spread lime, it makes it not favorable to grow Creeping Charlie. And then do an herbicide spray, and you probably have to do it more than once if you got a real heavy crop of Creeping Charlie. And then you should be able to not totally rid your yard, but get it in control to where it really is easier, to where then you can just go out and spot treat, where you don't have to spray a big area or your whole yard.
Now, the spray, does that harm grass as well?
No, it does not harm grass.
Okay.
Grass has a whole different makeup on it. Grass leaves, blades, mm-hmm. point straight up, and they have a wax coating and hair on them, so the spray hits it and runs off. Does not harm the grass.
Great. Now, what kind of spray, what is it called if we're looking for it in the stores?
My favorite would be Weed Be Gone.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that one. It's a gentle herbicide. It's not harmful. Don't use Roundup. Don't use Roundup because that'll kill everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Weed Be Gone is or any broadleaf weed killer will kill the weed and not the grass.
Great. Okay.
So that's important to know. Don't use Roundup because that kills anything green.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very well. And looks like we're just about out of time. Did you want to get anything else real quick?
No, I think that's about it.
Any thoughts to wrap it up? All right, great. Well, thanks for listening to The Gardening Show. Kathy, I hope that helps you out. Good
yeah.
luck on your Creeping Charlie problem. And hey, maybe next year, if you follow the advice, let us know how it turns out for you. And hopefully it'll work.
Yeah.
All right, wonderful. And lime helps with the acidity
in
the soil.
Yes.
And makes it less, I guess.
Less favorable.
Favorable. To the Creeping Charlie. Very good. All right. And with that, we will talk to you again next week. The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. On demand anytime at WESB.com.